Good morning. We welcome you in. It's Thursday morning. My Car Guru is on the air, and we have Lenny Lawson right here with us, the Car Guru.
I am glad to be in your presence today.
Glad to have you in my presence.
Radio guru.
I guess you could say that. Communications guru.
Yeah. You're not exclusive radio.
No.
I mean, I've been in an extensive television career. Were you ever like an anchor man?
Oh, yeah. I anchored, reported, of course, did a feature segment for many, many years, did a little bit of weather, did sports for 4 years.
So you had to, like, had the weather blank screen behind you, green screen, and you're looking off to the side, and you're pretending like you're pointing at stuff. I don't see how you get all that under coordination there.
Just something you get used to. First time or two I did it, it was a little wonky, is that the word? But then you get used to it like anything else, and you work with it pretty easily. But, yeah, I did weather for, well, I filled in consistently doing weather for about, 2.5, 3 years.
All of this has been in East Tennessee?
Yeah.
WJHL?
WJHL. Well, I worked at Channel 5. When I left Channel 11, I worked at Channel 5 for about a half a year. And then I came to WJCW and went back to radio full time.
Yeah. Well, you've got a face for radio.
I do. Yeah, I've been told that before. But
that's an old joke. That joke is just about worn itself out.
There were dinosaurs that probably used that joke. But come May, it'll be 42 years that I've been in this crazy stuff.
We should be able to retire by now, shouldn't we?
You would think, yeah.
You know, $20,000 a month. That's all it would take, right? You'd take a buyout, wouldn't you?
Sure.
Yeah,
why not?
Why not? Yeah. Well, you know, there are crooks in every business. That wasn't a good transition from what we were talking about, was it?
I don't think there's too many crooks where I'm concerned.
In the radio business? You don't think there's crooks in the radio business?
Well, it's not been my experience. There's probably crooks in the radio business.
There's crooks advertising in the radio business.
That's true.
Yeah. But yeah, you got to watch out for what you hear. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's not just the radio business. It's the internet and TV. And, you know, there's all kinds of things that people can fall for that they shouldn't. Fiat Chrysler Automobiles, you know, that is now part of Stellantis.
Stellantis?
Yeah, it's based in Amsterdam. So Fiat was bought out. Fiat bought out the Chrysler Corporation. So that Ram truck that you're driving was a Fiat for a while. Now it's a Peugeot. Okay. But they changed the name of the entire corporation. So Fiat, Peugeot, Jeep, Chrysler, Ram, it's all called Stellantis now.
So where did Stellantis come from, do you know?
Beats me. Someplace in Amsterdam, I guess, in the red light district.
Okay.
The red light district of Amsterdam. I've heard it's bad. I don't really know.
I imagine it is.
I don't really know. But anyway, Fiat Chrysler Automobiles, a division of
Stellantis,
pleaded guilty on Monday to charges that it conspired with company executives to make illegal, lavish gifts to United Auto Workers leaders, surely not, and undermined workers' confidence in collective bargaining. The U.S. unit of the Italian-American, now French, automaker said in January that it reached an agreement with U.S. prosecutors to plead guilty to one count of conspiracy to violate the Labor Management Relations Act and pay a $30 million fine. So they're going to have to raise prices a little bit, just a few dollars a car. You don't mind paying it, though, do you? You can help them pay that fine for cheating.
I don't know that I'll be paying it, but somebody will have to.
We're diving into the news a little bit today. Could you tell?
Diving headfirst into it, yeah.
The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, I just call it NHTSA.
NHTSA.
Has opened an investigation into a defect that could put 1.9 million of Toyota company's RAV4 SUVs at the risk of spontaneously combusting.
Ooh, that's not good.
The RAV4 is Toyota's top-selling car, with 430,000 units sold in the U.S. in 2020. The agency, the agency's Office of Defects Investigations said that the probe covers model year 2013 to 2018 Toyota RAV4s that have battery frames, which may result in the sudden loss of electrical power, vehicle stalling, and or a fire originating from the engine compartment. So that's not good.
Yeah, I can think of other ways that the vehicle should be explosive other than that.
Yeah, like explosive acceleration.
That's it.
but we don't want problems. I remember our lovely little Pinto, Ford Pinto. They were explosive.
I had one.
In a different way, right? Was yours a two-door? I guess they only made...
It was a two-door.
No, they had a station wagon.
Yeah, they did.
I guess they had a two-door station wagon.
But this was a car. It was a two-door.
Had the big back glass
it
window
did. Yeah,
hatch.
It was black with gold pinstripes on it.
Now, when you got that car, were you proud?
Of course. In fact,
how old were you?
I was 18. I had driven a 69 Chevrolet Impala. And then as a graduation gift, my folks helped me purchase the Pinto.
And you actually picked it out?
By
choice.
I think I picked it out.
You bought, instead of buying a really cool something, you bought a Pinto.
Well, I think it was a mutual decision.
Okay. They wanted something economical.
That was more because I was going to be driving to college, and so...
Why not a Vega?
Well,
the Vega was a better-looking car, you have to admit.
It was, but my experience with the Vega is a female that I had dated had one, and hers was rusted out and didn't leave a very good impression with me, so that's why I didn't like that too much.
Well, that's reasonable.
So that's why we saw the Pinto, and we decided, well, this might be okay.
You know, back in those days, we really didn't think about... What year was that?
That would have been 1979.
Yeah, I mean, we had Toyotas and Nissans, and we had Datsun 510s and stuff. Just never really entered your mind about a foreign car.
The price might have been, you know, part of the consideration.
Yeah.
The Pinto was probably a little cheaper.
I remember in 1971, my dad had an ad, I still have that ad, where he was selling Vegas for $19.95.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But see,
and
I
that was about $1,000 more than it was worth.
Exactly. But I had driven the 69 Impala, so jumping up to a 75 Pinto, I thought was really jumping forward, you know. Turns out I wish I'd had the 69 Impala.
So how long did you keep that car?
Let's see. Pinto was from June of 79 to August of 80, so a little over a year, and then traded it for the TC3 that I've talked about, Plymouth Horizon. And the biggest reason I wanted it is because it was my initials, TC. I told you about that.
That's just so... I don't know.
But drove the TC3.
Narcissistic, maybe?
I don't know. It's thought it was cool.
It is cool.
But I drove the TC3 until it started falling apart at about 60, 65,000 miles.
Yeah. Well, the industry didn't have to worry about semiconductors back then.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a chip shortage. Let's just call them chips. But anyway.
Is that getting better, by the way?
Well, the government is working. The government is getting involved in it now. So, it's going to be solved.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
Don't count on it. But a bipartisan group of eight governors from the U.S., basically from automobile states, has been urging President Biden to do more to press this semiconductor situation and address this global shortage because, you know, it could really squash automobile sales this year
yeah.
in 2021. It could delay introduction of a lot of the really cool stuff. They have fired back up the F-150 plant in Kansas City that was closed because of it. But only one shift a day. I mean, normally they would have three shifts building F-150s around the clock, and they've got one shift right now because they don't have enough semiconductors and to make it happen. So they'll figure it out. They'll just have to. I mean, I guess most of those are built overseas. I would guess the Chinese probably build most of them.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like they control everything electronic, even my iPhone. So we need to get a hold of that situation. Because, I mean, as we go forward, the EV revolution is not going to happen because they're going to have more and more of those things. And it's just become a almost like steel or copper. I mean, it is a commodity. It is a part of every vehicle and controls multiple functions on the vehicle.
Well, I think you've said on this show before, there's, 100 or over 100 chips in each car?
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yes. And in your cameras and in your phones and in everything else that we use.
Yeah.
Even refrigerators have them now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, just think about how all of the products have become smart. You know, just about everything that we use now, if it has smart in the name of it.
Smarter than most of the people that use them, it seems like.
And that's true in my case,
for sure.
We'll take our first break, and we'll be back in just a minute.
And we're back here on a Thursday edition of My Car Guru, celebrating this first big week of March here. We're just getting closer and closer to springtime.
Yeah, we talked about campers yesterday. Today, I'm going to talk a little bit about towing. And you know, moving heavy, bulky things down the road, whether it's a camper or a boat or just a, you know, garden trailer, anything that attaches to the back of your vehicle, it can be a tricky process.
I'm not a fan of that, by the way.
What?
Pulling stuff down the road.
You're not?
I think too much about what could go wrong, and I probably shouldn't do that, but.
Well, what you do is you just, you be smart about it.
Yeah.
And I have literally been following a trailer and watch it become disconnected because
mm-hmm.
the person had the wrong size ball on it
mm-hmm.
because they didn't know what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And they hadn't attached their safety chains.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so many different things that you can do. You know, I've seen a guy came to mow at the dealership not too long ago. Well, it was last spring, obviously, or last summer.
Yeah.
And he didn't have the mower strapped down. They were just, he just pulled them in there and was driving down the road. Now, what if he had to slam on his brakes or he rear-ended somebody? What's going to happen to that lawnmower?
It's going to go flipping over the top.
Yeah, it's going to become a 700-pound projectile,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, you know, driving a car with another set of wheels hitched up behind is a lot different than driving a vehicle by itself. And people need to take that responsibility seriously. I was sent a vehicle to Florida. I sold a 1970 Carmen Ghia convertible to a gentleman. And he paid me. He couldn't find anybody to get it down there for him, so he paid me to ship it. So I grabbed an F-350 off the front line, a used one, and I hooked my aluminum trailer to it, and we put that Carmen Ghia on the back of it, and my man headed all the way to Florida. When he crossed the Florida line, he had a blowout.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, we hadn't had the foresight to include a spare in that in the trunk. We had a spare, we just didn't load it.
Mm-hmm.
And so of all the times we don't load the spare, it was this time. And so it was a nightmare for him. It was in a driving rain. He still had, it had tandem axles, so it still had three on the ground. And he was able to get off the exit and stop, find a hotel, and wait till the next morning so that he could get a tire change, a spare
mm-hmm.
change. But you know, that happens. It's okay if you have some of the safety features. That F-350 had a lot of stability controls built into the software,
mm-hmm.
a lot of chips on that particular vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
It had a stabilizer hitch on it. It had the safety chains on. The vehicle itself was strapped down very securely. But even with that, I mean, if you could have a catastrophic situation happen, you know, a rapid stop, and who's to say that vehicle, that those straps wouldn't break or that the connecting points wouldn't. I mean, you can create all these different scenarios,
mm-hmm.
but you have to be prudent in what you do. There's a tremendous amount of liability, you know, for you
sure,
if
yeah.
you don't do it correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first thing you have to know is what is your capacity of your vehicle? You know, before you start hauling a bunch of cargo or a 18-foot-long boat, you need to know what the towing capacity is of your vehicle. There's a few definitions you need to keep in mind. One is the base curb weight. That's the actual weight of your vehicle, including fluids, a full tank of gas, you know, engine oil, coolant, and people, you know, they're in the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have to know what your cargo weight is. Like I say, that includes any cargo or optional equipment. And then the allowable payload. This is the maximum amount of weight, including cargo and passengers, that a vehicle can carry. And you've got to know those numbers
mm-hmm.
before you start going down the road. And then you have to figure out how to get the proper weight distribution. Now, I use, when I'm towing my camper, if I were to just set my camper on the hitch of my truck, then it's going to push the truck down and it's going to be sagging in the back. So I use a frame equalizing system that more or less makes it basically one frame from the front of the truck to the back of the trailer. And so I have to crank up the stand on the, and it's a power stand basically that raises the front of the camper up. You know, after I've connected it to the truck, I crank it up until they're almost, you know, the rear end of the truck and the front end of the camper are up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes all the weight off, and I hook up these stabilizer bars and then let it back down, and it's totally level.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you want. If you do not want the back of the truck overloaded because it makes the front of the truck where the steering is being done too light.
Mm-hmm.
and you lose a lot of control that way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not near as nimble a driver in my F-250 or F-350 with the trailer attached as I am with it disconnected. So you have to, you can't drive. I know I see people all the time. We have a lot of campers flowing down Interstate 81 and I-40,
mm-hmm.
you know, and where are they headed? Pigeon Forge.
Pigeon Forge, or somewhere down there to camp.
Yeah. And they're blasting down the road at 85 miles an hour with a 30-foot camper, you know, on the back.
Mm-hmm.
They drive, modern vehicles drive so good and tow so well that they say, well, it's almost like it's not back there. But it is back there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have to stop suddenly, you have to be able to, you know, to get that load stopped, you know, at a reasonable amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's something to... making sure that your brakes are synchronized. You know, most heavy campers, all heavy campers, and most car trailers and things like that have trailer brakes. But you might need, if you've never operated trailer brakes, you need to know how to set them up. It prevents the vehicle that you're driving from having to do all the braking. Because if you've got trailer brakes, they're going to engage first. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
When you put your foot on the brake, the trailer is going to engage first, and you're going to feel that, and then your vehicle's brakes are going to slow down the rest of the way. But you need that extra support in the braking just to keep things safe. You're still not going to be able to stop as fast as you could if the trailer weren't there, but it's going to be a lot faster, and it's going to keep things even. But synchronizing those brakes is extremely important. Also, having your mirrors set right. A lot of people want to be able to see the side of their camper. You know, if you're hauling a big camper behind you, and if you don't have extension mirrors, then that's not a safe way to travel. You cannot get the perspective that you need if you have just regular truck mirrors or regular car mirrors or SUV mirrors, and you cannot see around the sides of your vehicle. You have to be able to extend those mirrors.
Mm-hmm.
Most auto parts stores and places make an attachment you can attach on your mirror to give you a mirror that's further out. So that you can see. A lot of the car manufacturers like Chevrolet and Ford have cameras that you can attach to the back of your camper,
mm-hmm.
and makes it easier to see what's going on back there. I remember one time we lost one of our bicycles going down the interstate. Well, we didn't totally lose it. It was dragging on the road and had a car pull up beside us. I couldn't see it. Had a car pull up beside us and said, hey, you've lost a bicycle. You know, so I pulled over and I looked back, and we had ridden far enough that about half of the bicycle wheel was gone.
Mm.
It had just worn off. So these are important considerations when you're towing a vehicle.
All right, we'll take our last break. We'll come back and wrap things up. All right, we're back here Thursday morning to wrap up My Car Guru.
I had my camper at the house, 34-foot Keystone. These things have so many names. It was a Keystone Bullet Premier. Okay, that's what my camper is. It's made by a big company called Keystone, and they have all different kinds of brands. But I'd had it at the house all year and hadn't gone camping in it. And the only thing I had to tow it with at the house at that time was my Ford Ranger. Well, I looked up, got the manual out like a responsible person does, and I wanted to see what the towing capacity was on it. And my camper weighs 7,500 pounds empty. My towing capacity was 8,500 pounds. I said, okay, well, I can handle it. Well, then I attached it, and I just noticed how much it was sagging. And I said, let me look at that manual again. I looked at the manual again, and the tongue weight, maximum tongue weight on the truck was 750 pounds. That's how much it can handle with the hitch that's on the truck.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I wonder how much the tongue weight is on this
mm-hmm.
camper. So I go and look at the manual. I dug it out. I keep all my manuals just so that I can reference stuff, because there's a lot of different systems in that camper that are totally unrelated to one another. And, you know, if something goes wrong, you've got to have the manual for it. So I pulled out the manual on the camper itself. Tongue weight's 850 pounds.
Ah, okay.
Not good. So I could actually damage my truck and really impact the handling. Now, I was just going to drive it from my house to Gateway Number 2, which is about 4 miles.
Mm-hmm.
And see, and that's what goes through people. Well, you know, it's not that far.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to pull it to the campground. You know, I'm sure these things are rated at, they'll really tow more than they say they're supposed to. Mm-hmm. That's what gets you in trouble.
Yeah.
And so I disconnected it. I went and got me an F-150, you know, so the tongue weight, it could handle that much tongue weight.
Yeah.
That's an advantage that I have. You don't have that advantage because you have to buy your vehicles And so just make sure that that whatever you're towing, that you understand what its capabilities are. Make sure it's got good tires on it. You know, tires age out. If tires are more than 7 years old, you need to replace them. And that includes your camper tires and your trailer tires. And because when they blow out, all of a sudden that load becomes unstable and it's fishtailing all over the place. You know, it's not always about what it can do to you. It can, you know, you can kill somebody else because of your carelessness with the way you handled your camping or your towing. So let's just be careful about that. 10-4?
10-4. Sounds good. Good, buddy. All right. That'll do it for My Car Guru on this Thursday morning. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.